Ireland's Classic Hits Radio, it's Trina Mari here, and Christopher Paul Jones is with us today. He's a Harley Street phobia specialist and the author of Face Your Fears. Now, there's so many fears that people have, Christopher. I'm sure we could be here all week talking about the various phobias.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many. I mean, you've got fear of flying, you've got fear of height, fear of public speaking, and there's lots of fears that people don't even really think about from day to day. They're not even aware they have them, and yet they're governing people's behaviour all the time.
I think the fear of flying is definitely a big one, and I'm sure we might touch on that today.
Yeah.
Sometimes this fear of flying can just stop people from ever going on a holiday. Where does that fear come out of, and what can people do about it?
Right. Well, I mean, the fear of flying isn't one fear. So, I mean, two people with a fear of flying go, oh, I have a fear of flying. Oh, yeah, me too. But a fear of flying can be a fear of height. It can be a fear of being trapped, i.e. You can't get off. It can be a fear of the movement, the turbulence, fear of being far from home, and, of course, fear of crashing, or fear of loss of control, you know. So there's many different types of fear and many different root causes. And so, obviously, you know, the logical one, the most obvious one is you're on a bumpy flight and your brain goes, oh, that's scary, avoid. But it can be much less relevant than that. Like I say, it can be linked from a bad experience with heights or being trapped or other things from your past where your brain has created this conditioning where it's associated danger to something that isn't statistically dangerous. Now, in terms of what you can do about it, there's many different tools for changing the emotion and desensitizing those feelings. So you can basically, you can change how you feel very quickly because we don't catch an emotion, we do an emotion, we just don't really think about it.
I guess, you know, when somebody says they have a fear of flying, some, you know, there'll always be somebody who says, oh, you've more of a chance of being run over by a bus.
Yes.
And you still go outside of your house. That's probably not helpful to somebody who's afraid of flying.
No, well, the thing about fears and phobias is it's not logical. So you can know all day long how safe flying is, and it's not just the safest way to travel. It's statistically safer than being in your own bed. But if you don't feel safe, you don't feel safe. And it doesn't matter what logic does, because emotions aren't logical. And if you've ever tried to talk to someone who's highly emotional, using logic very rarely works. Telling someone they're being irrational, for example, when they're highly emotional, very rarely calms them down. And yet we do that with ourselves all the time. We're going, oh, what's wrong with me? Maybe I'm crazy. All these things, all they do is just feed ourselves out and make pain worse. The key is to learn, okay, yeah, there's a part of me that's not logical. There's a part of me that, while it makes decisions, doesn't work on the rational level, what you call, a lot of therapists would call the unconscious or subconscious mind. Yet that's what's holding on to your memories. That's what's making you, a lot of your decisions that you're not conscious of. But, you know, school, education, university, all teaches us to live in our head. So we're less good at tapping into our emotions and working with them. And so when I work with clients, it's almost, say, it's like learning a new language. It's like learning the language of how the emotions talk to us, really.
How long does it take then if somebody does have a fear, like a fear of flying, and they're going on holidays, you know, in 2 weeks' time? Is that enough time to get over this fear, or what is the process? What do you do with them?
Well, the thing about, so the analogy I often use is if you love dogs, love dogs, love dogs, love dogs. One day you got your hand ripped off by a dog. In a split second, you go from love to fear. If you're in love, in love, in love, find out your partner is cheating on you. In a second, you can go from love to anger, love to hate. The brain, with enough negative association, can learn in a split second to go from calmness to fear, to love to anger. And it's true the other way around as well. So once you find those triggers, you can change how you feel. And so a lot of people come to me and go, well, you know, I've had this fear for 20, 30 years, so therefore it's going to take 20, 30 years to remove it. And the truth is, they haven't. What they've had is one or two bad experiences from their past that they're not always remember, that they keep reliving for the next 20, 30 years. And that's the difference. So when you can find what triggered your fear, and as I said, that can either be directly linked to flying or indirectly, as in heights or being trapped or not feeling safe. There's various exercises you can do to desensitize yourself to it. And so one very simple process is about thinking of times you felt really good. So you go to times in your life where you felt really confident, really happy, like you couldn't stop laughing. And then you do something to condition that feeling. So squeezing your fingers together or squeezing your fist. Every time you feel good, squeezing your fist. And eventually the act of squeezing your fist will put you back to these positive memories. In the same as, you know, you listen to a piece of music and you're in a happy mood, you can hear that tune 2 years later and be back there in that happy mood. So it's conditioning. And so you can condition a positive feeling, and as long as that feeling is stronger than whatever you're thinking about that's negative or scary, it will take the emotional charge out of it. It will take the edge out of it. So that's one very simple way you can change how you feel. Yeah. There are loads in the book, but another one is, what are you focusing on? And so if you're thinking about flying and imagining yourself gripping the seat, and you're running that horror movie in your mind, of course you're going to feel anxious. The more you worry about it, the better you become at worrying. And so what you want to do is focus on, well, what's the outcome? So, you know, I don't know, imagining yourself sat on the beach enjoying the sunset or whatever it is, you know, so what's the reason I'm doing that? And it's the same for other phobias. So, you know, fear of public speaking, if you imagine yourself walking up on stage with everyone staring at you, you're likely to be nervous. If you put yourself after the event, imagining the round of applause you get and people going, oh, well done, you're going to feel a lot better about it.
Yeah.
And the irony is, even though our mind is trying to protect us by giving us all the worst case scenarios, we tend to move towards what we think about, whether we want it or not. So the more we worry, the better we become at worrying. It's a bit like exercising a muscle.
I mean, there really are so many phobias, like we mentioned there, the public speaking or the fear of dogs. I met somebody recently who was terrified of having a needle. And, you know, there are times in our life when we need to get blood drawn or whatever, we need to have a needle or whatever. Water is a big thing. Germs, I know I've seen TV shows about people who literally spend their entire day cleaning because they're so afraid of germs. And I'm sure after COVID, that probably increased as well. People having a phobia of germs. So many things. Birds are a big one that people seem to dislike. Going to Leicester Square now, that'd be, or Trafalgar Square, I should say. That would be somebody's nightmare, wouldn't it, with all the pigeons around?
Yes. I had someone recently whose wife wanted to move closer to central London. And they wouldn't do it because they're scared of pigeons. And they said where they were from, and I was like, do you not get a lot of wood pigeons in that area? And I'm like, yep, not scared of wood pigeons.
Nope.
But basically, aren't wood pigeons just a slightly fatter city pigeon? And so for them, there was a certain association to London pigeons or city pigeons over a pigeon in the woods. And maybe, probably, as we talked, you know, linked to germs, really, you know, because they're dirty, but the ones that live in the woods are cleanest for some reason.
Yeah, the
in the
flying
same way,
rats,
you know,
as we call them.
exactly. And so it's the association, but you're absolutely right. I mean, COVID, basically, and I say this in the book, everything got ramped up. So if you were slightly nervous about flying and you didn't fly for 2 years, you came out of COVID more scared. If you didn't like social interaction or public speaking, generally people came out worse. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they were in a confined, they were locked in their home, that were their thoughts, and they weren't ever sort of challenging their fears. And there was a lot, certainly in the early days of COVID, a lot of uncertainty. They didn't know how severe it was going to be. The news was constantly on because people just needed some kind of certainty. And so that created, everything became overclocked in people's minds. The level of safety people felt had gone. Now, you're absolutely right. With germ phobias, for years and years, people were telling, you know, oh, you don't need to clean everything 5 times a day. And then suddenly their brain went, see, you were right all along. You're supposed to clean everything 5 times a day, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yes, for germophobia, it certainly got ramped up. But also phobias, you wouldn't think there's a connection other than there's just something that happens to people when they're isolated and surrounded by a lot of uncertainty or fear.
There are people as well, Christopher, who are terrified of, say, driving on a motorway. Now, they're perfectly able to drive. They pass their driving tests. They're very experienced drivers. But the thoughts of going onto a motorway just absolutely petrifies them. And I'm sure that's to do with it as well. Similar to the fear of flying, the lack of control, maybe a little bit here. You are a little bit less in control when you're on a motorway.
Yes. So for some people, again, there can be several phobias. But yeah, for a lot of people, it's the fear of high speeds, you know, the uncertainty. And as you say, the fear of lack of escape. So it can show up in ways. It can also show up in traffic jams or where there's lots of light. People get scared of feeling that they can't get away. And of course, again, a lot of these aren't rational. You know, when people have claustrophobia, for example, you know, when they talk about lifts or elevators, you know, American clients, and go, would you be okay with a glass one? And people will tend to go, yeah, because I can see out.
Really?
And it's like, and logically, no, not if they're scared of height. It's the other way around.
It's the worst thing ever.
Yeah. So that's one way. That's also one way. If someone comes and says, I'm scared of lifts, you go, would a glass one or a normal one be better? And you can tell if it's height or if it's the height or the claustrophobia.
I wouldn't mind heights now, but I have been on holidays to a few places where they might have a glass bridge or something like that. And you're like, no, not going on that. Not a hope.
Well, there is something in us that even if we know that that's that glass is solid, to be able to look down and step on it, it's just very unnatural to the body to do because,
the some fears are natural,
They're kind of ingrained in us, Obviously, the fear of falling, but what happens sometimes with a fear of height, it's actually the fear of how you react on it. And so when you get scared, you go into what's called fight, flight, or freeze. So you either want to run away, play dead, or fight back. And so if you want to run away, if your reaction to fear is running, then sometimes you look down at a height, you get that adrenaline rush to run, and then you get terrified. I was going to jump. Mm. And so sometimes it's not the height itself, it's the fear of how you react to it. And that's also true with a lot of social phobias. Some people create what's called fear of the fear or anticipatory anxiety. And this is where you're less fearful of the thing, but more fearful of your reaction. So what if people see me get anxious? What if I embarrass myself? What if I make a fool of myself? And it's that fear of having the emotional response itself.
Something that hasn't even happened, actually. I had a housemate when I was in my 20s, Christopher, and you've just reminded me of this. A massive phobia with snakes. First of all, we don't have snakes in Ireland. Thank you, St. Patrick. But snakes, and even if it came on TV, she would actually physically be like, oh, God, I have to leave the room. She couldn't even watch a snake in the television. I remember that really, really well. That was in my 20s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are those, you can see some sort of genetic predisposition to being scared of those things. Because as you say, same as spiders, like in the UK and, Ireland, the spiders are harmless pretty much in this country. And yet people in Australia, like statistically, Australia and those parts of America and Africa do not have any more phobia of spiders than people in countries with harmless spiders.
Wow.
Why is that? So there's often a cultural association as well. So here, Halloween or spooky witchcraft, deserted buildings are spiders, when in some other cultures, spiders are considered sort of spiritual or, having some magical association.
Mm.
And so depending on sometimes society links, it's going to make a difference to how you feel about it in the upbringing you came in.
Yeah, I'm sure it's to do with as well when you're a child, because I remember when I was a child, my granddad always said to me, never be afraid of spiders. And he had us as children lifting them up and bringing them outside. And he always said never kill a spider because they kill the flies. So I am officially the spider collector in my household. And it doesn't, they don't bother me in the slightest, whereas my husband, not into the spiders at all. But if it was a rat or a mouse, I'd have to burn the house down. I could not be here anymore.
Exactly. And what are you brought up with? And it's the same, with dogs and cats. And they, in certain cultures, they're like one of the family. In other cultures, they're just there to hunt or to guard. Mm. Or sometimes that can make a big difference, your upbringing. What were you taught to believe? And also, on the negative side, and so sometimes people call me up and they go, oh, can you work with my son or daughter on XYZ? And my sort of flippant response is always, well, sure, have you worked on that? And like 90% of the time I'm right. Because, and I normally get something like, well, I don't tell my children I'm scared. That's not how children learn.
They're
picking up non-verbally. They're picking up by your decisions. There's so much we give away that isn't just through language. And so, a lot of things can be learned in childhood, either by, reading a story or watching a movie when you're too young to watch it, or, as you say, having someone else watch someone else react. All these things can feed our beliefs, and sometimes they just go in deep and create these lifelong phobias. But snakes and spiders seem to be very high up there, even in Ireland and things.
A friend of mine has a son who is absolutely terrified of dogs, and somebody said to her, you know what you need to do? Go get a dog. And I don't know whether that was a good or a bad suggestion, because I understand, maybe if they had a little dog that became his friend, he might grow to love the dog. But then on the flip side, that could make him even worse.
Yeah, this is the danger of exposure therapy, which is the idea that, okay, you're scared of flying. Okay, we'll start with a very small flight and then go to a bigger flight. Or you're scared of heights. Okay, start with two floors, then go to three floors, and so on. There is something to stretching your comfort zone, and the more you do it, the more comfortable you become. But the negative side is, if trying to do that, you become overwhelmed, then actually your comfort zone shrinks. And so I'm much more a fan of the tools that sort of desensitize the emotions first before you challenge it. So I don't think getting a dog is a bad idea, but first I would suggest that child comes and, does some of the tools that can actually help. Breathing exercise and all those things are great, but actually tools that change the association, actually change the link the mind is making to danger, because ultimately a phobia is an irrational response. And that doesn't mean the planes never crash or the cars never crash or that dogs never bite, but it does mean that the body's response is way overclocked to it. Mm. And, you know, and actually the things that are most common in phobias, like say house spiders or in this, in this country and Ireland, it's no big deal, and yet they're really high. Public speaking, you know, the worst thing that can happen is you feel embarrassed, and yet it's top of a load of people's fears. So it's not normally proportional to the danger anyway.
But, I reckon in America, Christopher, public speaking isn't an issue. I think everybody in America is so confident that getting up in front of people would not faze them at all. Have you found that at all with American people?
You know what? As you say that, I haven't given it much. It would be interesting to look. Mm. I mean, I've certainly had clients from America who have had a fear of public speaking. Is it as common? I would have to look at that. I mean, I think that's a research project right there.
Yeah, there
you would
go.
Think not because of the level of Americans are just generally more, yeah, you can do it. And,
we're too humble. We almost apologize for our ability.
Exactly.
And America, they'll tell you how brilliant they are. We'll apologize for even claiming to know what we're doing.
Exactly. Yes. We have to play it all down. And they'll say, I'm the best in the world at everything. And but sometimes that is bravado. And so sometimes people are overcompensating. You know, and I was actually talking to a market research company earlier about safety and how fears affect your mind. And, you know, there's a tendency to think that fear is just the flight or freeze. Mm. So you think you run away or you're glued to the spot, but also fight. And what does that really relate to? People who are stressed and angry all the time. Yeah. And so people that are tense and angry, they have a lot of fear. It doesn't look like fear. It looks like strength. And they think it's strength, but actually it's limiting them. And so just because someone has a lot of, I'm the best in the world, doesn't mean they're not actually got stuff on the inside that they need to work on. Mm.
Now, Christopher, I need to ask you this before you go, because there's a couple of odd phobias that people might have. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of people listening today who might actually text me in our voice note in the show if they have any stranger phobias. And I don't know whether people come into you and they feel a bit embarrassed about saying the phobias, but I mean, we hear about things like people being afraid of buttons or cotton wool or baked beans. And I mean, I hear this on the show all the time. So what's the reason for that? That's not, you know, obviously a button's not going to do anything to you, or a baked bean is not going to do anything to you, like the way maybe a plane could crash.
Yeah, but as I say, public speaking, other than being embarrassed, doesn't do anything to you. All it is your brain has been in a heightened state of stress or fear while seeing that thing or experiencing that thing. And so do you know of Pavlov and his dogs?
Yes.
So Pavlov, bring a bell.
He salivates, yes.
Humans do the same thing, as they say. You hear a piece of music, just to love your life, hear that tune 2, 3, 10 years later, you could be back there smiling. Mm. Love your life is breaking up with you, tune playing, you hear that tune 2, 3, 10 years later, back there crying. Mm. So all that needs to happen is that person was in a very stressful state, scared state, happened to see the button. Feel stressed, see the button. Feel stressed, see the button. The two become linked in the neurology. And so it was like the Little Elbert experiment, which I talk about in the book, which was where basically back in the 1950s, where they had no morals, psychologists would show a small child different animals and he'd stroke them. And then every time he went to stroke them, they'd bang a gong behind him. And so he would go into shock while stroking the animal, instantly link fear to that animal, even though the animal hadn't done anything. Yeah, so I mean, terrible, as was some of the things Pavlov did, but it proved how easily conditioned we are to feeling bad, but also conditioned to feeling pleasure as well.
Yeah.
There are certain associations, and it's important to remember this, that the things we're doing, the things we enjoy, there was probably some point in our life where we made a positive association. We were in a great state and we happened to see this place and go, oh, I really want to live there, or see that job and felt good. Okay, I'll do that for a living. You know, so we're conditioned all the time without us really being aware of it. And yeah, I had someone come to see me, had a fear of tinsel.
Tinsel.
And you would go, tinsel, you know, that Christmas.
Christmas must have been a nightmare.
Exactly that. And and when we looked at the root cause, when we relaxed the mind and trapped her back, she'd been, her cousins had wrapped her in tinsel one Christmas as like a game, and she couldn't breathe and it had gone in the throat and she thought she was going to choke. So you think, well, tinsel, come on, you know, like traditionally, I just need to sort it out. Yeah. But actually, when you look at what may have triggered it, it makes sense. And so it's always looking at not the surface thing, but what's the emotion that's become linked to it. And as I say, our emotional mind, our logical mind, our non-logical mind, our subconscious, doesn't work on rationale. So it will just make these associations very quickly sometimes.
Yeah. I must figure out then, I have this thing about brushed steel. I cannot, like, I can't even have a Mac laptop. Because the brushed steel. And my husband always says, my husband always talks about the time we paid an extra €300 for a fridge freezer because I needed to get the glossy one because I couldn't get the cheaper one that was brushed steel. Right. There must be something in that. There must be.
So, I mean, without turning it into a session now, it would be, do you remember when you saw that kind of steel, maybe as a child, for example?
No, I don't. I don't remember at all. Okay. There must be something there.
Yeah. And again, a lot of this is some of the bigger things will be conscious. You go, oh, yeah, I got terrified on a plane or I got terrified being made to be able to speak. But a lot of them sit dormant. They're in there. They're in our emotional mind, but we can't access them. Mm. Yet they're governing us. And this is why certain sort of interventions that rely on relaxing the analytical mind, so we can talk with our emotions. Often all these things come up that people haven't thought of in years. And go, oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course that happened. And so, it's always interesting working with people and
you hear absolutely everything. Yeah. Finally, Christopher, I'm sure you get a lot of well-known people in through your doors, Hollywood stars and celebrities. And I mean, do you have to sign away everything about them because they don't want the public knowing what their phobias are?
Yeah. I thought you were going to ask me who.
And oh, no. Say, no, unless no, they're no. Giving me a testimonial, I'm not going to ask you who. No.
I have had some that are quite happy to talk about it, but they are less common. You know, I've also had TV therapists come to see me. People that are kind of like, well, I can't show that I'm not perfect, you know. But often everyone has something to work on, you know. And what I would say is one person's, oh, this seems so silly and whatever, that other people think is silly, they have a fear of something else. Everyone has a fear of something. They might not call it a phobia, but I often say, you know, if there's something in life you haven't got and you've set a goal to get it at a reasonable enough timeline, you know, it's not like I want to be a millionaire in 2 weeks, and you haven't got it yet, it goes without saying there's some level of fear that's stopping you, something that's blocking you there to work on.
Now, I promise this is my final question. Do you have any phobias yourself, Christopher?
I mean, it's always the question I get asked, and the flippant response is, no, I'm absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
So I did used to have a fear of flying, and I did used to have a fear of public speaking.
Well, obviously not anymore.
Insects and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
There we are.
And I worked on, one of the reasons I learned all these tools was to help myself first. I never thought I'd be doing this with other people, you know, 15 years ago when I got into it. And now, you know, now I help people all the time. So I would say this. I would say I don't have any obvious fears, any obvious phobias, sorry. I must have some level of fear somewhere because I haven't achieved every single goal I've set.
All right. Christopher Paul Jones there, Harley Street phobia specialist, and he is the author of the book Face Your Fears. Thanks so much for coming on. It's Ireland.
Thank you for having me.
Classic Hits Radio.